Welcome to Diverse, a Society of Women Engineers podcast. SWE gives women engineers a unique place and voice within the engineering community. On Diverse, we highlight incredible women in STEM and discover who they are at home, at work, and everywhere in between. You can find all of our episodes online at podcast.swe.org or wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Hello, I'm Karen Horting, the Executive Director and CEO of the Society of Women Engineers. And welcome to Diverse, a SWE podcast. We have a very special guest joining us today, Dr. Jessica Wade, who is a physicist and faculty member at Imperial College London. Since 2018, Dr. Wade has been adding pages to Wikipedia that highlight and give proper credit to women and people of color in STEM. She has been recognized for her great STEM outreach work in The Guardian, the BBC, NPR, and many other media outlets. We are so happy to have her with us on Diverse today to discuss her efforts to gain recognition for women in STEM, both on Wikipedia and beyond. Welcome to our show, Dr. Wade.
Thank you for having me.
When I say I'm excited, I will also say I'm a little intimidated, having looked up some of your background. And then when I saw physicist, I thought, oh my gosh, what an incredible woman we're going to have on the show today. But on Diverse, we like to start at the beginning and learn about your origin story in STEM. So what initially sparked your own interest in science and engineering, and how did that interest evolve over time?
Oh, great question. And I don't think I should intimidate anyone. You know, I think I was very well supported to train physics, and they had fantastic teachers, which was definitely part of my inspiration to get into the subject, but also made it possible to pursue this kind of career. So I'm definitely not an intimidating person, but I grew up in a family of medical doctors. My mum is a psychiatrist and my dad is a neurologist. And actually, my mum is one of six brothers and sisters, and my dad's one of five brothers and sisters. And there's a lot of medicine in that, all kind of psychology or teacher. And so I had a lot of people around me who had these careers that discovered things and made people's lives better and gave back to society. So I think I always knew I wanted to do something that was kind of societal focused, but used discovery and understanding to help make the world a better place. And then kind of when I got to high school, I discovered subjects like physics and chemistry and art and maths. I really loved all of those things and kind of advanced maths. And I had really fantastic teachers. You know, they really helped me. They took the subject out of what we were just doing in the school curriculum and made it something that really came to life. And everyone was so enthusiastic and inquisitive. And I felt really inspired and excited in those classrooms. And then when it came to choosing what to study at university, my parents kind of, you know, said, go for whatever keeps you curious, go for whatever makes you excited. So I spent 1 year learning about art and learning all different artistic techniques and living in Italy and doing a bit of history of arts and Italian. And then I chose to do a physics degree. And I think it's quite a cool move of my parents, given that neither of them had studied physics or knew anyone who was an engineer or worked in physics, but they were so supportive that if it was something that I was passionate about, it would ultimately be something that was a useful skill to have. And definitely it's proved that, but I had no idea at the time. You know, I just had fantastic teachers and supportive parents. And I suppose it's motivated a lot of the outreach and engagement and advocacy I've done since, because as you know, as I'm sure you've discussed on this amazing podcast, that not all young people have that. So I kind of feel this commitment that I should give some of that back.
Yeah, I love that idea of giving back. We do talk about that a lot at SWE and the importance of role models and mentors. So you're in a faculty role as well as your research. Can you talk a little bit about how you try to maybe create that inclusive environment in your teaching work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I'm actually in an engineering department now. So even though I grew up and was trained in a physics department, I've moved into material science, which is in engineering at Imperial. And my research focuses on new materials for future technologies, things like optoelectronics and spintronics and quantum technologies. So it has this kind of fundamental understanding for technological applications focused to it, which obviously impacts how I lead a team, but also the kind of research I do. I think actually a lot of young people, particularly people from historically excluded groups, are quite motivated by the idea that they can take what they're learning in a classroom and use it to give back to society. you know, they can create a better solar panel, they can make some kind of diagnostic device, they could create some kind of better brain imaging scanner or something like that. So obviously I try and do a kind of research-led teaching. We're a very research-led university at Imperial. But also beyond that, I mean, I've been doing this project for a few years about trying to improve the representation of women scientists on Wikipedia. And that obviously trickles into everything that I teach as well. You know, the examples that I give in class, the types of role models and the types of demonstrations that I give of people who they should be reading and learning about are scientists and engineers from historically excluded groups. And there I'm not kind of explicitly saying, oh, look, this is an amazing woman engineer. There I'm saying, oh, look at this absolutely extraordinary discovery, and this is the person who did it. So you kind of stealthily communicate that there have been women, there have been people of color, there have been LGBTQ plus scientists the entire time. And so part of it is in what I teach, part of it is in how I teach, part of it is in how you support students and who you put forward for opportunities, you know, inviting particularly women, particularly intersectionally marginalized people to come into the networks and the spaces in which you get, you know, if I've been given an opportunity, I like to make sure that other people get a chance to experience that too. And last night, I went out to a funny dinner party of physicists, and I took another new young woman lecturer colleague because I knew that we kind of have power in numbers. And if I'm given this chance to go to this obscure thing, I should take someone else to experience that too. So I think, you know, part of it isn't just making science and engineering more inclusive and welcoming for the next generation. It's also leaving the door open so that other people can come in right now.
Yeah. Well, I love the examples you were giving of weaving those diverse engineers and scientists into your teaching. I mean, there's a lot of research that shows children, when they're asked to either name a scientist or engineer or to draw one, it's often a man. And so I think the more we can do to not keep these folks as hidden figures anymore is so important. So let's dive into, with that, the incredible work you've been doing to increase the visibility of women and people of color in STEM, particularly on Wikipedia. So can you give us an overview of this initiative and sort of what inspired you to start doing this work?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I kind of, and much like everything that SWE stands for, I got into a physics department as an undergraduate student, and I looked around and I realized it wasn't as diverse as it could be. And I believe genuinely, passionately, that diversity stifles innovation. You know, we make discovery slower, we're not creating technologies that benefit all of humanity, and ultimately we're doing it with taxpayers' money. So that seems completely absurd to me. So I was doing a lot of kind of outreach and going into high schools and speaking to teachers and trying to get people to be enthusiastic and to care about these issues and for young people really to choose a career in science. And then I kind of realized I was limited on the number of students I could reach or the number of kids that would turn up for a workshop, or the number of parents that would send their kids to some kind of summer camp during the holidays, or bring them to a university talk on the weekend. And actually, if we were really going to change people's perception of what science is and who does and doesn't do science, you have to meet people where they're at. You have to go to them. You have to take science to them on the platforms that they're operating on. Just kind of in late 2017, I'm sure you all celebrated it, but that extraordinary film, Hidden Figures, came out. Which looked at the African-American computers, the women computers at NASA. So the women mathematicians, the kind of Katherine Johnsons and Dorothy Vaughans. It looked at their story and on a global stage in an incredibly slick film said, hey, these African-American mathematicians were always there. They were doing these calculations that enabled this extraordinary technological progress of humankind. And that movie really inspired me because it showed me the kind of power of media in conveying these stories and these messages. I obviously don't have the budget of $1 billion or $1 million film studio. So instead I thought, how can I tell these stories? And actually, Wikipedia is a really interesting platform for science communication. You get this chance to communicate information with everyone in humanity, irrespective of their age, of their gender, of their ethnicity, of their geographic region, of their political leanings, of their career that they do, whether they're a journalist or a doctor or a school student or a teacher or an academic or a climatologist or a lawyer, people go to Wikipedia and trust it. So I kind of realized the power and the potential of this as a means for sharing information. It's also very democratized. There's no cost to reading Wikipedia. So you're sharing information with people all around the world every second of the day who genuinely need to hear about it. And I started thinking, you know, this is obviously a great platform to tell women's stories on. And then when you dig a little bit deeper, you find that even though it is a great platform, even though it is used by everyone in humanity, actually, it's really bad at telling women's stories. It's really bad at documenting the contributions that women have made to the world. So when I started editing, if you looked at the biographies on English language Wikipedia, which is by far the biggest language Wikipedia, of about the millions of biographies that were on there, only about 17% of those biographies were about women. So 1/7%. And that's not just women engineers, it's not just women scientists, that was all the biographies. And so I started really thinking, I'm going to instead try and change this. I'm going to flip this narrative. I'm going to start writing these biographies so we can inspire this next generation so that we better document and celebrate the contributions that women scientists and scientists of color have made. And so that we can really, really start to rewrite these wrongs, because I hope you agree with me, but I think for too long, kind of history books have been written by men and about men and generally for other men. And Wikipedia is really our platform to change that.
I totally agree. And I think Hidden Figures really opened a lot of people's eyes to, like you said, you know, history is documented by men about men, and women and people of color are just so often left out. I mean, 17% to me, I'm not surprised, but to hear that number is kind of shocking. How many articles have you written, or how many entries maybe have you updated on Wikipedia so far?
Yeah, I've written about 2,100. So I was doing pretty heroically at one a day. And then when I became a lecturer in October, so when I joined faculty, I had an overwhelming amount of teaching. And so I'd spend my evenings either writing a huge research proposal we were doing or teaching. And then by the weekend, I'd find I'd only written 2 or 3 Wikipedia pages that week. And I'd feel so guilty. But then I balanced it by saying I'm still preparing stuff for students. So I'm at about 2,100 biographies and trying to get back to doing what, one a day again. But it's quite hard when you have all of the grown-up responsibilities you get as a faculty member.
Well, I'd say you've single-handedly put a big dent in that 17%. So thank
you. We've gone up to about 19.5%. So okay. I'm about 19.5% now. And that's not because we're not writing enough women's pages. It's because as we write these pages about women, other people write pages about men as well.
So you've been at this now for a number of years. What was the most unexpected or surprising thing you have discovered so far through this work on Wikipedia?
Oh gosh, that's such an interesting question. I mean, there's been so many fantastic and inspiring stories and people. It feels a little bit unfair to single out individuals. I guess kind of patterns that I've discovered are things like, if you try and write stories about scientists from Europe, it's quite hard often to find biographical information if they are from, say, France. Whereas if you're writing about someone from America, it's a lot easier to find a lot of references documenting their life story. So often with American scientists or engineers, you can find where they went to high school. Maybe if they're on an athletics team, you can find quite a lot that they've contributed to their local community. American academic websites are pretty up to date, and they usually are really well hyperlinked and referenced. Whereas if you're writing about a French professor, it's often really hard to find any biographical citations at all. You can normally download a resume, but you can't find more information out than that, which is quite an interesting shift, even though you don't think of the countries as being that different in lots of the science and engineering spaces. I found often that even though there's this kind of misconception that to be a successful scientist, you either have to solely focus on the science, so that should be the only thing that you care about, to the detriment of all the other parts of your life, you know, your creative passions, your family, your whatever activities you like doing, whether that's, you know, going skiing or snowboarding or whatever. So I found that's complete rubbish, that actually often, more often than not, the most fantastic scientists and engineers also have these other parts of their lives that obviously is massively important in keeping them creative and inspired and motivated in the lab. So I would say it's taught me a lot about how non-linear academic careers are. You know, it's not necessarily a case of you did your undergrad here, you did your master's here, you did your bachelor, your PhD here, you went over there to do your fellowship, and then you got a professorship. Actually, people move around, they move fields. They often don't get things the first time they apply for them, but then we'll get them afterwards. So you learn a lot about the kind of pathways to becoming a successful scientist or engineer. And then you also learn actually, and I guess this is another really interesting one to me, that we talk a lot about the kind of decision or the kind of trust involved with being a scientist. You've got to believe in the science that you're doing. And often I think people find it hard to rationalize that scientists can also have faith. They can be religious. But more often than not, especially when I'm writing about researchers of color, you find that they are religious and they balance these two beliefs. You know, they believe passionately in the science they do and they believe passionately in the religion they have. And I think I didn't know that kind of context until I started editing as well.
Yeah. Well, I really like how you've touched on telling the whole story, because we hear that often when we're doing outreach at SWE with young girls, and they're surprised that some of the very successful women in science and engineering have families. They have interests outside of their work. And so, yes, the science and the engineering is very important, but you're a whole person. And I think for women and people of color, it's so important to tell that whole story.
It completely is. You know, I've got a phenomenal head of department in materials in the Faculty of Engineering at Imperial, who has three children, three sons, one of university age, one of applying to university age, and one who's just started middle school age, I guess is the right term for America. And you just think, how are you leading a successful research group, head of a department in one of the world's best universities, and an incredible mum, and a runner, and, you know, someone who makes these things possible for early career scientists? And there are those people, you know, I think that it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to balance things, and you're going to have times in your life when you work harder on some aspects of it than other parts, but it is possible to make it happen. And I think that when, certainly as a young woman lecturer or someone who cares passionately about their family, seeing people like that in positions of power is very inspiring.
Yep, I completely agree. Any pushback as you started doing this work?
Certainly at first, I think in any of these things, and probably you've discussed it on the podcast as well, but I feel that when we start to criticize people for not, say, writing about women scientists or engineers, immediately they feel in this place where they've got to be defensive about not having done it. So if you start criticizing men for not promoting or supporting women engineers, instead of thinking, huh, okay, I'm going to do this differently next time, they start to get defensive about it. And that, I would say, happened in the beginning, that I was going around saying, oh, there are all of these incredible women engineers and no one's writing about them on Wikipedia. And the interpretation to the majority male editorship of Wikipedia was, oh, okay, she's basically saying we're sexist and we're awful people. So at the beginning, I was quite criticized, or at least they were very quick to criticize if I made mistakes. You know, and I think probably women engineers often experience this, but if you're in a marginalized group or a minoritized group, you've kind of got more intensive eyes watching you. You know, you've got closer inspections on your behavior. People are trying to see you slip up. And I definitely felt that a little bit. And I'd feel that everyone was just basically waiting for me to get something wrong on one of these Wikipedia pages. So then I tried harder. I wrote them better. I had to try harder to write people who I knew would fulfill the notability criteria. So to be on Wikipedia, the person has to be of general interest. It's not just a site for documenting all engineers and scientists throughout history. They have to have contributed something that's impacted the world. And you can get very carried away thinking every woman engineer I meet is sensational and amazing and inspiring, because of course they are. But that doesn't mean they should be on Wikipedia, because they may not fulfill these notability criteria. So along with getting better at writing pages, learning to tone back how angry I was whenever I did interviews, I also had to make sure the people I was writing about ticked off these notability criteria, just so that it was harder for people to criticize me.
Yeah, I have heard that working with Wikipedia can be quite challenging. We have an archivist on staff, and she has said that, you know, some of the criteria can be quite difficult. But we do participate in an engineering and technology history wiki. It's ethw.org, and it's a partnership that SWE is a part of with a number of the other discipline societies. And listeners who are out there can submit stories for the wiki that will be reviewed and then added to the page. So that is another avenue, not as big of a reach, as you've said, as Wikipedia, but another opportunity to tell some of those stories. And have you heard from anyone that you have highlighted or their families?
In a kind of roundabout way. And maybe I'll just pick up on what you were saying about different ways to tell people's stories. I think that's really important to emphasize. Like, not everyone is going to write a Wikipedia page, right? But you decide what you talk about at the dinner table or when you're out with friends, or who, if you put together a television program, what kind of stories you cover. Everyone has some opportunity, I think, in the kind of sphere of influence of their own lives to start to really champion women and to give women that recognition and to say, you know, this pizza box or this rocket ship or this whatever it is was designed and engineered by a woman, and just make it more commonplace in society that we start saying that. Because I think part of it is that we don't give women credit for what they've discovered and contributed. But coming back to whether anyone's got in touch with me, certainly one of the key times, I think, probably for living people that their biographies on Wikipedia are used is if they're about to give a talk at a conference. Often the person introducing them will just go on a search engine and type in their name, and then usually their Wikipedia page will float to the top because it comes to the top of every search that you do online, because they're kind of indexed immediately by the browser and then they'll come up when you do a search. So often it's through that, or because they're then nominated for an award or they get an invitation or an opportunity to do something. Because, you know, all that I'm doing in this is like a messenger, right? I'm taking the stories of these incredible, inspiring people that I collect from different parts of the internet, putting them into one place on a platform that people know about and can trust and are excited by. And so obviously, when people have access to that information, they can use it to book them for shows, to book them to speak at conferences, to nominate them for awards and prizes. And I think when that stuff starts happening, that's when I find out about it. So 100%, I've spoken to people afterwards who either their children have stumbled across it, or their research group have stumbled across it, or something's come from it that's good. I feel like I'm happy to be some tiny part in this bigger journey of celebrating them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So a big part of SWE's mission is drawing attention and highlighting the accomplishments of women in the field. And I know that Wikipedia is sort of just one part of what you're doing. So can you talk a little bit about how you've spent some time nominating people of color and women for various STEM awards?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really important. And again, it's one where I think everyone listening can really play a role, that we don't only write Wikipedia. I mean, one shouldn't only write Wikipedia pages or talk about people at the dinner table, but actually sit down and write a citation or a nomination for an award or a prize. Getting an award, getting professional recognition, whatever your professional body is, whatever your learned society is, having a medal or becoming a fellow or becoming a kind of senior member, being recognized for the science and engineering or the education or the engagement that you've done is such a validation of all the hard work. But we know that more often than not, men are being recognized over women, and particularly white men from Western universities are being recognized over people of color and people from the global South. So something I try and focus on a lot and try and encourage other people to do is to really think about who they're putting forward for these prizes, to try and work with societies to make the kind of loopholes that you have to get through the application process as smooth and transparent and easy to operate as possible, and helping people to write those citations and those nominations so that more diverse people win. And actually, I think when you speak to people who run these schemes, run these awards, run these prizes, they want more diverse candidates nominated. They just don't get them put forward. You know, they don't hear from people who want to nominate that Black physicist or that Black engineer. So really, our responsibility is to start putting those citations and those nominations in, because the professional bodies want to champion and recognize these people just as much as we do. But they have to have a recognition. They have to get a nomination letter to get that.
Yep. I'm going to say a huge plus one to that. I will just give a little shameless plug for a couple of things we do at SWE. One is, each year in our SWE magazine, we publish a feature called Women Engineers You Should Know. And so I encourage all our listeners to think about the women you know doing fantastic work, or who have done fantastic work in the past that we should know about. And again, thinking about folks with different intersectional diversity so that we can recognize them. And then also for our annual SWE Awards program, think about your colleagues, think about mentors, role models that you've had, and nominate those folks so that we can make sure we're highlighting the good work of all the women and diverse folks that are out there who may not be getting that recognition in other places. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the future. So can you share a little bit about future goals and aspirations, maybe both in terms of your scientific research and then efforts to promote diversity in STEM?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm relatively new to being on the faculty, and I just started a research fellowship in October as well. So I'm kind of building my little dream team at the moment. I have two PhD researchers in chemistry that are co-supervised and one PhD researcher here in materials, who I am lead supervisor for, but have two fantastic professors helping me. So I have kind of the beginnings of a research group, and the hope is that this year I'll recruit some new people to join, maybe someone a bit more senior, who can help out with supervising more junior students and also help to design and build some pieces of kit. We work on these beautiful molecular materials for applications in quantum technologies and different technologies where you try and control the spin of electrons or photons. So lots of that is trying to think about what we can do from a chemical design perspective. So working closely with chemistry to design these molecules, then thinking about what type of characterization techniques we should build, and then thinking about how we can translate that understanding into devices. And so I'm trying to build a team who can do all of that, which requires a whole bunch of diverse people with completely different skills. So it's a really exciting time, I think, from a scientific perspective for what we're going to discover, and also from just a personal perspective of thinking about the types of people you want to hire to a team that's growing. From a kind of advocacy and equity perspective, I'm obviously going to continue to champion women and minorities in anything that I do, but also thinking, how can we make this more embedded, more of the kind of infrastructure, less of people doing this in their evenings or on the weekend, but something that's more sustainable in everyone's careers? How do you make sure that people in positions of power and positions of privilege step up and serve as allies? I think it's often quite scary for people because they feel like they're going to be massively criticized if they say the wrong thing. And so I feel part of my responsibility is to kind of help people who do have that privilege and that opportunity realize how they could share that with someone else, and embed it into the way that we teach, make it so part of the kind of fabric of the university and the research experience that we don't have to have these, keep having these big public initiatives anymore. It just becomes something that's so commonplace that you really have to keep advocating for people to even begin to do more innovative things, because everyone's just doing ED&I, equity, diversity, inclusion work anyway. So my passion is that we keep doing this. I'm going to engage more with senior leadership, engage more with policymakers. I care a lot about the way that science policy operates in the UK and in the US, and to keep kind of pushing, hopefully, the right people's buttons so that we start to affect and see real change.
Yeah, I agree. And as you said early on in the podcast, faster, better innovation comes from diverse teams. So there's really no downside.
Well, there's really no downside other than you disrupt the status quo.
Yes.
And it means you say, and when you start doing that, people start to get anxious and unsettled. So I think that's like the one downside, is that as soon as you start saying this isn't right, this isn't fair, people take it as a kind of personal affront and think you're criticizing them. And we've just got to make it clear to everyone we're really not. You know, this is about building a more fair and inclusive society that's better for all of the scientists and engineers in it. It's not about doing something that promotes one group, because we've done that for too long.
Yeah. Rising tide raises all boats, right?
I firmly believe that.
Yeah. Well, this has been an incredible conversation. I know I am feeling super inspired, and I'm guessing that many of our listeners will be as well. So do you have any tips for our listeners who want to start highlighting hidden figures? You know, how do they get started?
Well, I think if they want to edit Wikipedia, it's as simple as when you next read a Wikipedia page, pressing edit rather than landing on the tab that says read, which is what you usually land on. And then actually you can play around with the type of formatting, the way that you input references. You can start to improve other Wikipedia pages before you start creating your own, and then create your own account on Wikipedia and document and track all the pages that you create and the impact that you have. if you are feeling like you really want to contribute, but you don't want to create a bunch of content, you could go onto your Wikipedia page of your favorite woman engineer and translate it into another language. So you'll see down the left-hand side on a Wikipedia page, you have a bunch of other language wikis explaining that page. And actually, they're human contributed. You can translate that as well. But if you also are thinking, this Wikipedia thing isn't for me, nominating people for prizes, writing books about people, introducing them on your radio shows, writing theater plays and screenplays about people, making sure that they're taught about in the classes that you teach, making sure that if you work in a big department and you have really busy, hectic meetings where often women's voices are pushed out of the conversation, making sure you take the time to bring women's voices in and giving people credit, ultimately giving women credit for the work that they've done and celebrating the opportunities that we hope that every young girl and young woman has for tomorrow.
Well, I think those many suggestions there that are easy to do, some that maybe are a little more challenging, but I'm guessing there are folks out in our audience that are going to take on this challenge and help support the kind of work that you're doing. So thank you again, Dr. Wade, for taking the time to share your insights with us today. I know my mind is turning a little bit that I think this podcast is just one of the first steps in our engagement with you that I hope. I'm thinking there may be some speaking opportunities, some other things out there. So this will not be the last time I think that our listeners here at SWE hear from you.
Thank you so much. It's been really fantastic.
So I'm Karen Horting, and from all of us at SWE, thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Diverse. Please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your social network. You can visit podcast.swe.org to keep up with our episodes and learn more about how the Society of Women Engineers empowers women to achieve their full potential as engineers and leaders.